Welcome to In the News for October the 7th, 2022. I am Brett Burney from AppsandLaw.com.
And this is Jeff Richardson from iPhone JD. Hey, Brett.
It is a good morning. It is a plus size morning. You reported that all of those people that had ordered an iPhone 14 Plus were going to start receiving it today. In other words, several weeks ago, we had the iPhone 14 available, but one model you could not get at the time, right? And that was the iPhone 14 Plus, not the Pro or the Pro Plus or the Max or the Pro Max. I mean, there's so many names on this, right? Yeah. But today, if you had ordered an iPhone 14 Plus, it could be your lucky day.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suspect that most of the people that ordered the day that they came out, those were probably the hardcore enthusiasts like me and you, who probably got the Pro models, whether it's the regular size Pro or the larger Pro Max. But I suspect that over time, the iPhone 14 Plus may be one of the best-selling versions of this line, because a lot of people don't they feel like they don't necessarily care about the Pro features. They just want to get the entry-level iPhone, but they want the bigger screen. And that's what this is. So it's the entry-level iPhone with the bigger screen, which we haven't had in the past. And plus, as a result, because it's larger, it has the best battery life of any of the models.
That's what I think people are going to go for.
So, you know, for me personally, I'm like, gosh, you're not going to spend the extra $200 to get the extra camera, to get the island at the top and a million other things you get with the Pro. But, you know, for a lot of people, they're like, no, I don't want to spend that extra $200. Right. You know, this is what I want. So so it'll be really interesting to see how I mean, we'll never see the numbers, but it would sure be fascinating at the end of this 1 year cycle, like after Apple's had a full year of this. I would be really curious to see how what percentage of people bought each of the four models. Again, Apple will never reveal that competitive information, but I'm very curious about it. I have no doubt, though, that third parties will try to estimate it through various surveys and things like that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, this was a great review that you linked to from The Verge. And that's how do they say it at the very beginning? This is the new iPhone that most people will want. It's not the iPhone with the neat new display features or a high resolution camera, just like you said, Jeff, but it is the phone with a big display and a battery that goes for days. I really think that's what's going to sell people. Again, just like you said, Jeff, if you don't care so much about having the highest end camera necessarily, but nothing against the camera in the iPhone 14, right? It's still an excellent camera. It's just, it doesn't have, what's that the third
one? It doesn't have the telephoto lens.
The telephoto lens, okay. Yeah, which most people are like, okay, but, you know, I'm not like taking pictures of, you know, birds in Antarctica or something. So it's fine. I don't necessarily need that. Yes. The Verge said, excellent multi-day battery life. But on the bad, they said, hard to use one-handed or fit in a pocket. So, you know, go and try. I still always encourage folks, like if you're looking at which phone to purchase, try to get to an Apple store if you can, or, you know, a Best Buy that has some of these. I mean, to me, that's the best place just to kind of fondle it, you know, put it in your own pocket. I mean, Apple stores are just so great in letting you do that. And you can at least figure out if the size is going to be correct for you or not. And once you get that new iPhone 14, you will be running iOS 16 on it probably. And, you know, as much as I wouldn't say that 16 for me has been revolutionary, Jeff, but certainly I have totally enjoyed a lot of the things that I can do with the, you know, the lock screen and several and the, you know, the editing messages. But not until you linked to this story did I realize, oh, wait a minute, there's a lot more in there that now I wish I had, but it's coming.
Yeah. When Apple, it used to be that Apple really, really tried to get all of the marquee new features available when the new, you know, significant updates would come out every September of every year. And I found over the past couple of years, Apple has gotten more laid back about it. They will announce features as being part of the iOS 16 family, but many of them, they have no problem saying this one's not going to be available on day one.
Right.
And so there's a whole bunch of things that Apple has announced, or at least we think are coming, that are not yet available. And Apple will just get to them when they're ready. And frankly, I would much rather have them when they're ready than now.
Absolutely. So, agreed.
You know, just to go through a couple of these here, you know, the iCloud shared photo library, which will allow, you know, and I've heard mixed reviews about this. I want to see it in practice. But, you know, the idea of it is a great idea, which is there has to be a way that you can share photos with other members of your family. Because right now, like one person in your family gets all the photos and the rest of the people don't. And so now you can sort of have a designated album that is your family stuff and that could be shared with people in your family, and people can add to it, and edit pictures. And then another album that's just your own personal pictures. So that'll be an interesting feature. The live activities for third-party apps, this is what I think is going to make the dynamic island so much more interesting, because you'll be able to put, you know, sports score updates and, you know, Uber, you know, updates where my Lyft card is. You know, to have, instead of having frequent notifications, you know, dinging you.
And then you have to open up the phone.
Right. Why not just have, you know, at the very top of your screen, or if you, if your lock screen's on. So that's going to be a really, really cool feature. We've talked before about this, the SOS stuff. Apple Music Classical is one that, the satellite. Apple Music Classical is one that Apple, I don't think, has admitted to this one, but we do know that years ago they did buy this, this company that was called Primephonic. Did you ever use Primephonic? Right.
I had not, but yeah, I'm not enough of talking about this classical option
I'm not enough of a classical music fan, but people that were really into classical music would say that you listen to classical music differently, because you often want one song to go directly into the other. You want to have different information about the songs, because, you know, the artist may not be as important as who is performing. I mean, the artist may have been, you know, has probably been dead for forever, but it's, you know, what performance of this? Is this the London Symphony? Is it the London Symphony in the spring or in the fall? You know, those sorts of things. And so it's just, there's something different about classical music. And so when Apple purchased this company, everyone thought, well, first, maybe Apple's going to put it in Apple Music. And then the rumor is that Apple was going to have its own dedicated Apple Music classical app. I don't remember if Apple has officially announced anything about it. But anyway, the idea is that that's coming soon. So the other interesting ones hidden here, too.
The Apple Fitness Plus, right, without an Apple Watch. I mean, people have been asking for that for a long time. Yeah. I mean, I always like to have it with the Apple TV, or the, or I even do it on my iPad, you know, or on my iPhone. But I know there's a lot of people that would just like to have the option of doing, you know, it just on the iPhone, like watching it on the iPhone, even without an Apple Watch. And I think that's good.
You won't get the statistics of like how your workout's going, but you may not care about that. You might just want to follow the instructor and do the workout. Yeah.
And then at the bottom of this, I'm so glad you linked to this article, but because I remember being amazed or enthralled with this announcement of Freeform. It's almost like a digital whiteboard.
Exactly. Jeff.
And I was like, not until you linked to this story that I'm like, yeah, wait a minute, Apple, you talked about this and you didn't give it to us yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to see when this is going to come out.
Yeah. And there's some other ones in here too. So, I mean, suffice it to say that there's lots of interesting things about iOS 16 coming out. Yeah. Frankly, there's probably some other things coming that we don't know about, but even among the things that we absolutely know about or that we can predict, it's an interesting list here of what's still to come.
This is probably my favorite link that you had today, because it's the best use that I have seen so far for the Apple Watch Ultra GPS. I love this one. Why don't you explain what this guy is doing here?
The GPS on the regular Apple Watch is reasonably accurate. If you've ever done like a workout, I've done this before where you do a workout and then later you look on your iPhone to see the path that you, like I'm talking about like an outdoor workout, like a run or something like that. And you can see the path. And when you look at that picture, you will see it's not 100% accurate. I mean, there are places that the path may say that you curved off. You're like, no, 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 I didn't curve off. I went to the end and then I went back around. It's not perfect. It gives you the general sense of where you were. But with the Apple Watch Ultra, which of course you're wearing, there is not just one, but there are two GPSs. Wow. And that second GPS is it's a newer band that can be more accurate. And so as a result, the Apple Watch Ultra is far more accurate on knowing exactly where you are. And the perfect the perfect showing of it.
Even just in my walking around, like, you know, I wasn't like tracking a fitness or anything, but frankly, even just like I used to have the map, you know, on my watch, or just like the next direction or the next turn. But I have got to tell you, just in using it over these, over this last couple of weeks, it has been far more accurate. And I will tell you this, the bigger screen on the Apple Watch Ultra allows me to see the actual map. Like I just, I don't even need to get my iPhone out as much. So anyway, all that to say that I'm excited about the GPS.
So what this guy did is while he was mowing the lawn, he tracked as he went up. And because, you know how you mow the lawn, you go up one line, down one line, up the next line. And so if you just compare the two pictures of the one with this previous Apple
Watch. There it is.
And then the one with the Apple Watch Ultra, you can see, I mean, it's the one that was taken with this previous Apple Watch looks more like a Jackson Pollock painting or something like that. It's a little crazy
all over the place.
the very, very precise Apple Watch Ultra, you could see it, you knew exactly where he was going. So
that's pretty incredible, actually, when you see it. Like you said, a picture can do 1,000 words there. That's crazy.
If you're listening to this podcast without looking at the video, you'll have to check out this post or watch the video version, because
absolutely,
you know, that just shows it all. So, and I presume that, by the way, you're still enjoying your Apple Watch Ultra another
absolutely.
Weekend.
You know, it's just as the more I hear about it and talk about it, and then you link to this review, which I know you and I texted back and forth about, from Mark Gurman, I just thought he hit it out of the park on just about everything on this Apple Watch. You know, it takes everything good about the Apple Watch that has evolved. And, you know, again, I know the biggest knock on it, I really think, is just, you know, the bulk of it. Although I got to tell you, it's becoming more and more easy for me. It's not the heaviness. Mm-hmm. The bulk doesn't mean the heaviness. In fact, I don't even realize it's on my wrist. I've worn heavy watches in the past. And, you know, I can tell, like, when I turn my wrist, I'm like, wow, I'm kind of getting a little bit of a workout. Nothing like that. The only time that it really hits me is maybe if I've got a long sleeve, you know, dress shirt on or something like that. But even then, it still is okay. I can just tell it's a little bit different. I will tell you quickly, we were talking about the bands for the Apple Watch Ultra.
Right.
I have gone back now to the original, what is it, the sport band or whatever the original band that came with the Apple Watches. Mm-hmm. And that one seems to be working out better than anything else that I've tried. Other than the Solo Loop, I've tried, you know, I had my scuba diving band last time, which I like, but to me, that was just bulky. But this one seems to hold it directly in place so that it's not even, you know, flipping around or anything. But this Gurman review,
Rick, do you own the Milanese Loop one that I'm wearing right now?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
Because that's one, I saw one picture online that paired this, because I've had this since my first generation Apple Watch,
years
ago. And I saw somebody online that paired it with the Ultra, and the titanium of the Ultra actually looked pretty good with the Milanese Loop. Yeah. But you haven't tried that. Okay.
I haven't tried that one yet. I might. I mean, I feel like I think, like many Apple Watch owners, I'm on a never ending quest to like try as many bands as I can. But, you know, just quickly, let me just add, I don't know if we mentioned this in another recording, but it is pretty incredible, Jeff, that Apple has allowed us to use all of these Apple Watch bands over all of the incarnations of the Apple Watch, right? I mean, nobody would have blamed Apple, I don't think. I mean, they would have complained, but nobody would have blamed if Apple, you know, said, well, we're doing the Apple Ultra, but it's going to be, you know, completely different with, you can't use your old Apple Watch bands, you know, in any of the third party bands. But it's incredible that I am able to swap out and use all of my Apple Watch bands with any of the Apple Watches, even from the very first one. You know, some of them are a little bit bigger. Obviously, your Series 7 is bigger than, you know, 5 and 4. But it still is pretty incredible that I can just go back. And I don't know, I feel like Apple doesn't get quite enough credit for that, because after all of these generations of the Apple Watch, that's great that we can still use some of those.
I agree. I mean, an Apple, a case for your iPhone that you bought 5 years ago, there's no way it would work on a new iPhone today.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
The band that you spent just as much money on, you know, does still work, which is great.
Yeah. These are some other good reviews that you posted in here too, from, which is Digital Trends. This was great.
I thought that was a very nice one. Yeah.
I thought that was great. What did he say in here? It's as if the Apple Watch Ultra is as if Apple took the Series 8 and had it reimagined by Tonka. To me, I just kind of like, that's right. It's like, it's the metal, you know, it's the titanium. Anyway, I am still thoroughly enjoying it. And I just like the idea that I don't have to worry too much about it if I bonk it somewhere, you know, or if it drops or something like that. So yeah. And thankfully, I'm not the only one that is wearing an Apple Watch. This was a great little story that you put. Let me see if I can get the correct link here. That, you know, we even have Apple Watches at the height of our legal profession.
Yes.
In the United States. I didn't even notice this. And normally I will pick up on things like this if I see pictures, but this is Judge Ketanji Jackson, Brown Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. And this was when she was getting sworn in. And sure enough, if you look at her wrist, she has an Apple Watch on. And I just thought that was really cool. And you even went a little bit further and were telling people that if you really zoom in on it, you can even see like the time that is displayed on that. Really cool.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's two, you know, the picture that you're showing right now is from, it's not technically her swearing in, it's her investor, which is more the ceremonial thing, which occurred recently with President Biden and stuff. But when you go back a couple of months in June to when she was technically sworn in so that she could actually, I think it was around June 30th, Justice Jackson was sworn in so that she could officially start working. And she was also wearing the same Apple Watch there too. And these were like official pictures at, you know, something as formal as a swearing in. If you're wearing your Apple Watch when you are sworn in as a Supreme Court Justice, and then you wear it again at the investor ceremony with the president, you're an Apple Watch user. You're all in. Exactly. There's no question. This is not just something that you throw on when you go do your workout. This means you are a true Apple Watch user. So, so bravo to Justice Jackson. And so I think she's, I'd like to think she's one of us. You know, she's probably got an iPhone as well. She's using an Apple Watch. Yeah. She's,
I like it.
But, and that, but, you know, I say this jokingly, but at the same time, you know, technical issues do go up to the highest court of the land all the time. And I, you know, the fact that you're wearing an Apple Watch to me,
good point.
Indicates that you are connected enough to, you know, the world of the new technology and stuff that I hope that that's a perspective that she brings that maybe some of our other justices don't have that connection as much, and she can bring that to the bench. So again, maybe reading too much into that, but we shall see.
I, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but you know, as since I've been always interested in like cyber law, you know, and like copyright issues online, you know, there have been many cases that have gone up to the Supreme Court, you know, from constitutional aspects. And I didn't think about that, Jeff. That's really interesting because I've always complained that I see cases come down, you know, the whole Napster and MP3 files, you know, just so many technical things like that. And it's not always the Supreme Court, of course, but, you know, I always complain about the judges and I'm like, man, you don't know what you're talking about. But that's a really good point. I'm glad that you pointed that out on that.
Yeah. Well, by the way, the link, before we go on, let me just mention the reason that I sort of posted that or the excuse for it was that, again, the brief that The Onion filed this week, I'm just going to say, if you're not
good.
A lawyer, you'll enjoy it. But especially if you're a lawyer, it's the most it's a hilarious Supreme Court brief. Absolutely worth reading.
And I just have to say the subject of this, well, the reason that this is going to the Supreme Court is literally maybe about 45 minutes away from me. It's on the west side of Cleveland here because there was the gentleman that from Parma, Ohio, that posted, well, we won't go into all the details, but this is such a great, it's a great, what we call a friend of the court brief, right? That that The Onion, as many people would know, submitted in support of this, this gentleman, I just it's so, I started laughing out loud earlier this morning.
Every
too.
And my kids,
I know my kids were like, what's so going on? And I'm like, if you know technology and you know the idea, if you know a little bit of, you know, how the law and something goes up like this to the Supreme Court and you know about The Onion, it's absolutely hilarious, you know, because they serve, The Onion serves an advisory capacity for such nations as, you know, the former Soviet Union, and they also owned the world's transoceanic shipping lanes. I mean, it's just really fantastic. Yeah, it's good links there for folks to make sure. But back to a serious aspect of the legal component here, you posted a couple of things about the little thing called USB-C. I know we've talked about this a little bit, but this is something that went a little serious. The European Parliament voted by the end of 2024, they want to see all mobile phones, tablets, and cameras must have a USB-C charger. And that's going to affect a little thing that we know called the iPhone, unless Apple, you know, does a 180 and changes some things on that.
Yeah. And everybody knows that Apple was the target of this European regulation. Yes, not that Android phones don't use different things too, but, you know, people in Europe were frustrated that there were so many different charging standards there with Lightning, USB-C, and I guess to a certain degree, USB micro and mini and everything else. Right. And they just want the idea of having a single standard, which I think is a very laudable goal that, you know, who wants to carry around multiple chargers. So I'm with them on what they're trying to do.
Right.
I have questions of whether legislation is the right way to do it, because as I pointed out in my post that, you know, it stymies better technology coming out in the future. And I actually looked last night and I tried to read the text of it. I had trouble following exactly precisely what this is going to require, because, for example, if a, you know, can you make an iPhone that has no charging ports that just uses wireless charging. Right. You know, the way I don't know. I don't know if that would violate this standard. And again, I have questions about it. So we shall see. The heart's in the right place, but it is going to affect the industry. The rumor had been that Apple is coming towards USB-C anyway. In fact, right. I was surprised that when the new AirPods Pro case Me came too. Out yeah. One Me or two too. Weeks ago, I actually thought they might have USB-C at the bottom instead of Lightning. But you know, so we'll say, I presume in a year or two, Apple will comply with this and that everything will have USB-C. But then, you know, the other thing I pointed out, we talk about this all the time, is USB-C is not just one thing. There's exactly. so many flavors. There's so many Absolutely. Speeds. There's, you know, just this week, I didn't even link to this, but there's something that's called, I think it's called active USB-C or something like that, which is like powered and can have cords. It's so confusing. Ugh. But anyway, yeah. hopefully this will make things simpler. One can hope. And
well, even just we'll to your say. Quick point, I mean, obviously the European Parliament is different than the Supreme Court of the United States, but you know, just the idea of folks maybe at the highest ends of Parliament, like do they exactly know what they would be doing? Because I thought your point was excellent that you posted in here, Jeff. Imagine if the EU had passed this law 10 years ago, right? What if they had everybody, it must be USB-A, right? Would we be stuck with that then? Like, how right. is this law going to, you know, going to accommodate mm-hmm. all of the changes that, you know, and of course, technology moves at the speed of light versus, you know, legal regulations do not. So anyway, just good stuff. We'll definitely keep following it. And hopefully people kind of know how to resolve that appropriately. But you mentioned the AirPods Pro. Why don't we go to a store that you linked to as well, which I thought was an excellent little comparison here between the AirPods Pro Generation 2 and this is called the Bose Quiet Comfort Earbuds 2. Great little review here. I think, spoiler alert, the AirPods Pro pretty much came out ahead on several of the comparisons. And certainly, if you've got an Apple device, it's almost no question. But it's good. You know, Bose has been doing this for a very long time too, Jeff.
And that is the most interesting part to me, Brad. Bose invented active noise cancellation. Right. I mean, this is what they're known for. And you would expect, and Bose has a reputation, like Apple, of being more expensive, but very high quality. And some people would argue that Bose is, you know, you're paying too much for what you get. The same complaint that people would often level against Apple products. But Bose things have been pretty high quality, and people that use Bose have been happy with it. So this is the latest and greatest earbuds from Bose. And I was really curious how they would stack up to the latest and greatest earbuds from Apple. And this review that Dan Barbera of this video review that he wrote says that, you know, frankly, the AirPods Pro are better in most categories. He thinks that for the most part, they sound better. There's some slight differences in, like, Apple doesn't, the Bose lets you tweak things more. So when you turn on the noise cancellation, or active noise cancellation, ANC, you can actually tweak within the settings. Do I want to have even more noise cancellation?
Yeah,
do I want to have even less? That's not something that you can change on AirPods. But again, I don't know that most people want to spend the time, you know, making all those tweakly changes. Usually you just want to have, either you want to have active noise cancellation or you want to have transparency mode. And Bose doesn't have anything nearly as good as Apple's transparency mode. So he does point out one or two, you know, minor advantages that the Bose do have. But for the most part, he says that, and especially for people that use Apple products, the AirPods Pro are the one to get. Plus, they're cheaper. The Apple ones are actually $50 cheaper than the Bose product.
I know.
So, you know, but so I was waiting for somebody to post a review like this, and I'll be curious to see others to see, you know, but it's nice to know that the Apple product is incredibly competitive and maybe arguably better than the Bose product.
I think one of the things he said about the Bose product was better was being able to adjust the volume on the actual AirPods.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the AirPods Pro V2, we have that capability and I love it. I love the fact. Now, I will say if I'm running or, you know, walking briskly, right? And so I'm kind of going up and down. It is kind of hard for me to like grasp the little tail of the AirPods Pro and like, you know, flick my finger up or down. But I do love it though. I just love, if I'm sitting, it's not a problem at all. I just love the ability to quickly do that without having to tap my phone and, you know, change the volume, that kind of a thing.
I do it almost every day. And I agree. Sometimes like you, it's a little awkward to reach to it. And I haven't tried it by running yet. That's a good point. It may even be harder if you're running like that. The way that he describes it as sort of you with the Bose one, you do it on the outside of it, as opposed to look down on the little stem, which may be better or worse. And so I, you know, maybe it could be improved. I'm not saying it's not awkward at times, but it is so, so useful. I mean, all the time I am raising or lowering my volume just by touching the AirPods Pro. Works great.
Hey, I saw quickly you have your foam ear tips on your AirPods Pro. How is that working out for you?
I've gone back and forth between them. These are the Comply ones. And I think, you know, there was something, I don't know if this was just my brain playing tricks on me, but I had not used the built-in tips in maybe a year or so. And so when I got the new AirPods Pro, I used the Apple ones for a while. And I thought to myself, actually, these are better than I remember them. I was really enjoying them. But then I would find that they would sort of, you know, move out of my ear a little bit. And I would feel like it was coming. It did not literally fall out of my ear, but I felt like it was going to fall out of my ear.
Right. Okay.
And so
you don't need that. You don't need that stress.
and again, this is just because of the shape of my ear and stuff like that. So I went back to putting on the Comply, the foam ones that sort of, you know, you squeeze them a little bit and you put in your ear and they fill up. So they're very, you know, they're not going anywhere. They also provide a little bit more passive noise cancellation because of the foam. So combined with the active noise cancellation makes the whole process work even better. So I like them. I mean, I think I've gone back to the Comply and I think that's what I'm going to stick with for now, but I'm always looking for a better mousetrap. And if somebody comes along with a better idea, definitely, I'll try that as well.
Well, I haven't tried them myself yet, but you had that recommendation for my wife because she had the exact same complaint that she was doing and she loves them. She loves those foam earbuds. Like it's a very good, like you said, it's the best I think of what we can get right now. Mm-hmm. So I'll put a link to that, to your review of that, because I thought you did a good job on your site as well. So another Apple product you reviewed about 3 months ago, if I'm not mistaken, Jeff, and now we have somebody that is talking about a year's use of the MagSafe battery pack. And he still says it's going great. This was on Apple Insider. And I would be interested to hear if you agree with a lot of his findings on this.
I do. No, it's a great little product. And it's my only complaint about the product is I don't find that I need to use it that often because, I mean, especially, I mean, right now I've got a brand new iPhone. The battery life is, you know, really good and stuff like that.
Right.
The main reason I would use it is for traveling. When I posted my review earlier this year, we had just come back from a trip to Italy and it was fantastic when I was in Italy because, you know, we'd be, you know, many, many hours we'd be away and have no easy way to charge. It was great for that. But now that I'm back to like, I'm in my office during the day, I'm at home and I'm not using it that often. but having said that, I have a trip coming up to Washington, D.C. in a week or two, and I'm looking forward to having it there just to, you know, have something quick and easy. It is the quickest and easiest way to just, you know, get some extra power on your iPhone. So I'm so happy that I have it. And I'm glad that it remains compatible. I mean, I bought it with the iPhone 13 Pro. Now I'm using it with the iPhone 14 Pro. Hopefully it will continue to work with the iPhone 15 Pro, whatever comes next. So I
keep
like
waiting for it to go on sale again. I don't have it. I still have a knockoff brand, which I used yesterday. I had to go downtown for a conference that I was at. And sure enough, I just wanted a little bit extra juice, you know, to make sure it was going to get through the cocktail hour and everything. But I remember when you reviewed this a few months ago, it was on sale for like $80. Normally it's $100. And I keep watching. I guess that's your following on Camel, right? It's like, when is this going to go below? I mean, I think it's $98 right now on Amazon.
And I recommend that. And that's how I was too. I'm sort of on the fence. At $100, I'm like, I don't quite know, but when it hits that $80, I'll get it. And if you find yourself on the fence too, you know, wait around. If it's gone down to $80 once or twice before, it'll do it again at some point.
One of the things that we do have in iOS 16 is crash detection, if I'm not mistaken,
for the new models.
The good news for the new models. Exactly. Yes. And if you find yourself in the middle of a demolition derby, the good news is that at least your Apple Watch will work and call 911 if emergency services if necessary. This was a great story you linked to here from one of our favorites, you know, Joanna Stern. She does fantastic videos, and I watched it and just thoroughly enjoyed this video here.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I linked to a video that I saw on YouTube of just some silly guys with a YouTube channel who crashed cars just to see if it would work. Did. And that was interesting, but they weren't terribly scientific about it. Joanna Stern was more scientific about it. She was very careful about the tests. She was very careful about being safe by using a derby car driver who's a professional, you know, person.
A professional on derby.
And she found out something. One thing that I did not even realize is it's not the act of being in a crash that triggers the call to emergency services. It's the act of first, the car thinks you've been driving for the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
And then second, you're in a crash. And so when she had a car that was just sitting there in the lot and she put an iPhone 14 in it, and then they crashed into that sitting car, much like your car was sitting in a parking lot. If somebody just crashes into the car while it's in a parking lot and an iPhone happens to be in there, it's not going to call emergency services because this is not for just a crash. It's for a crash while you're driving. Now, once the phone or the Apple Watch can sense from the GPS and other things that you have been moving around fast enough to be driving, well, then it gets into the I'm ready mode. And so now if you stop at the red light, even if you've been sitting there for a minute or two, well, now it will sense if it's been crashed or if you're actively driving. But that was a distinction I did not know about. And she discovered it in her, and she actually thought it was a bug and reached out to Apple. And then they explained to her, no, no, that's why you're not sensing it some of these times. But having said that, now that we understand how it works, her test proved that Apple is telling you the truth, which you would expect them to do, but that it really does work. I mean, if you're in a crash, it really will call emergency services. So that if you are disabled or in a situation where you can't call for help yourself, your iPhone or your Apple Watch, assuming that you have one of the newest ones, will take care of that for you, which is nice.
I remember when we talked about this, it was announced by Apple. You made the comment, like, I can't wait to see all the YouTube videos where everybody was going to start wrecking cars just to test this out. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a fun video. Joanna's videos are really great. And just being able to show that. And did you say also, I think you mentioned this in your post, like the Apple iPhone will even do things like look and see if it's connected to CarPlay, right? And something's going on. Like it looks for several factors that way.
Right. If I'm connected, it uses, all the things that would tell a phone, this is somebody who's in a car driving, being connected to CarPlay, being connected to Bluetooth for a car, the fact that it's in motion, all those things that, but high motion, not just the motion that you would have from walking around town at whatever speed a person walks. So it really does.
He was going full speed crashing these cars.
Yeah, it really does want to think that you are driving a car before calling emergency services. Cool feature.
That's great.
And it takes, and just so that people remember, it takes about 20 seconds because once you're in a crash, it takes about 10 seconds to register that you're in a crash and that's what it really is. And then it starts a 10 second countdown timer. And so Joanna Stern said that, it's overall from the time of impact till the time that it calls emergency services, you have about 20 seconds. And that's good because what if it was a false positive?
Exactly.
You would want to stop it. Or what if maybe you were in a crash, but you don't need to call 911 because you're fine.
Right. Exactly.
Everything's okay. Right. So you can stop it.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. I'm glad that you linked to that. In the know, I think we got a couple of apps today. You have an app too, right? Mm-hmm. Here's an app that I want to suggest. It's actually an app that I have used for years, Jeff. So nothing against the built-in calculator on the iPhone. In fact, my wife, I think the vast majority of people would use that because it's built in. But there is a company called TapBots, which I know we've talked about TweetBot before. They make Twitter apps and only a few, they only make a handful of apps, but I've always enjoyed them and their work. Well, so they had CalcBot that I downloaded years ago, and I've always seemed to like this calculator interface a little better than the built-in iPhone calculator. So anytime that I would go and use it, for doing finances or, looking at something, I always use this, but I've always used the free version. And I don't know why it took me so long to pay $2 to upgrade, because not only is it an excellent calculator, and you can even have Taptic and sounds, so you can swipe back and forth. I just love the readout and the display underneath, so I can see the numbers, and then what functions that I've done, right? It'll keep a little running tab of the number underneath, so I can see, did I make a wrong, did I make an error there? That's all available in the free version, so definitely download it if you've never used this. But if you pay $2, two silly dollars on this, first of all, you get the quote history tape, which is like, if you think of the old, calculator sitting on a, CPA's desk or something, you know, it's got like the ticker tape out so you can look at it. That literally is what this is. So you can go back and you can see a whole listing of all of the calculations that you did. And then you could even copy those, you know, results and paste it somewhere else in there. But the if you pay $2, you also get themes. So you could like color the calculate a little bit differently. But the biggest thing for me is so cool is the whole unit conversion. I mean, there are, you know, multitude of apps that do this for you, but I just love the simple way you can swipe from the left to the right. You can do unit conversions from Fahrenheit to Celsius, you know, to from kilograms to grams, whatever you need. All of that is built in. Then in addition to that, though, there is an Apple Watch app. And I got to tell you, I like using my calculator on the Apple Watch to do tips for restaurants or things. Mm-hmm. This Apple Watch app for CalcBot will also do that. And I kind of like it. It looks just a little bit different. But it, of course, on the Apple Watch Ultra, it's so much easier to use a calculator because you got a little bit of a bigger screen on there. And then lastly, I also love it because you can get CalcBot on your iPad, which of course I know we've talked about this before. The iPad does not have a calculator built in, and there's been rumors and stories that, you know, Steve Jobs saw the iPhone calculator go to the iPad and he hated it, like it was too big, and so they killed it. And so the iPad has never had a built-in calculator. And again, there are a multitude of apps that you can get, but I think CalcBot is one of the better ones that even looks good on the iPad as well. So that's my recommendation from TapBots, and the app is CalcBot.
Yeah, I've had it for years. I haven't been using it as much recently because I've been using pCalc, which is another excellent app.
That's a great one too. Yes.
And you know, as you were talking, I just installed, because I didn't have it installed on my watch yet, I just installed CalcBot on my Apple Watch. And you know, it's interesting. So I now have three different calculators on my Apple Watch, the built-in one, which is good, and can calculate tips and stuff like that. And then I've got the one that I installed 5 seconds ago, CalcBot, and then pCalc, which is the other calculator app that you're showing on the screen right now.
Right.
And they all have different takes on what an Apple Watch calculator should be, which is interesting because you don't have much space in the screen. You want to have buttons as big as possible without being too big. And they just have different ways of doing it. pCalc, for example, can have it that underneath the number keys, you can have the plus and the time.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I see
and
that.
If you hold down to bring it up, it's just a different interface. So my point is, if you're a person that, if you want to use a calculator on your Apple Watch, which can be useful, you should try all these different ones because there's no one right or wrong way to do it. It's just different developers have different ways to take advantage of that interface. And they're all worth trying out. And I don't even know which one I like the best. I mean, the built-in Apple calculator is pretty good. But I actually really like the pCalc one. But now that I'm sitting here looking at CalcBots, that's pretty good too. But again, you were talking about your iPhone. I agree. On the iPhone, both CalcBot and pCalc are fabulous. I love the ticker tape on CalcBot. There's something similar in pCalc, but it's nice that you have these good alternatives.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad you mentioned pCalc too. I haven't tried that, but I see a lot of people talking about that one for something. And it looks like there is a pCalc Lite, which is free, and then you can pay $10 for, you know, unlocking the regular version of pCalc. But I agree. You know, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of calculator apps. I realize that. But for me, from a polished perspective, CalcBot is the one that I like a lot. And pCalc is another good one, too.
Yeah. So so speaking of the Apple Watch, I have a little tip on the Apple Watch, too, which is this. It's an app from Icon Factory, which is funny. The CalcBot is made by the people that use that create a TweetBot, which is the
TweetBot,
the Twitter app that I use. Icon Factory, who makes another Twitter app, Twitterific, the guys behind that have made this little app called Now Playing Plus. Before Watch OS, we're on 9 right now, right? Before Watch OS 9. So on Watch OS 8, if you were playing music, you would sometimes see at the very top of the watch, like a little triangle. It was like the play button, and you could sort of tap that and it would bring you to the Now Playing screen. I've noticed in Watch OS 9, I don't see it up there anymore. Ooh. I think Apple has removed that feature. And a lot of people say, if you want to like quickly jump to the Now Playing screen, you know, you can open the app, but that's a pain because you got to, you know, make sure it's in your dock.
And I have to go find it.
You need to go find it, stuff like that. So what this is it's just a little, I mean, all that the app is basically just like a little shortcut that brings you a now playing screen. Ooh, it's not the actual now playing screen. It's a third party version of it. But basically, when you install this on your Apple Watch, which you actually have to do on the Apple Watch, go right to the App Store on your Apple Watch, search for Now Playing Plus. It's free. And then once you have it installed, when you have a watch face and you decide that I want to have a little complication in the corner or on the side or wherever, you just select Now Playing Plus. And so now, like when I'm looking at my watch face right now, if I want to jump to whatever is now playing, I could just tap on that little thing and it brings up a screen that's got like the play button in the middle. And,
oh, I love it.
You know, jump back 15 seconds, jump forward 30 seconds or whatever, what's playing. So it's just a quick way. And therefore, it doesn't matter what app is playing through your Apple Watch. It could be a podcast. It could be music.
I do that all the time. It could be,
whatever source is playing, you can control it with the now playing screen. So anyway, it's if that's something that you find useful on your Apple Watch, and I actually do,
this is cool,
then it's free. You know, consider installing it and putting, you know, one of your little complication spots, put Now Playing Plus there, and you can jump to it quickly. And I had never heard of this app. It was another Jason Snell mentioned it on another podcast this week called MacBreak Weekly. And I installed it and I'm like, wow, this is really useful. Check it out. It's pretty cool.
Well, first of all, this is the first time I've actually gone to the App Store on my Apple Watch. I've never done that, Jeff. It is very cool. I didn't know that I could like see all of this, because I've always thought, well, okay, I got to get the iPhone and, you know, install it there. And then you can say, you know, install over to the Apple Watch. So first of all, that's very cool. And second of all, I love this, because you're right. I used to like, especially if I'm running or walking or something like that, I either have a podcast plan, or I've got Spotify, or I've got Apple Music, or, you know, news or something else playing. And I am thrilled. And also because now with the Apple Watch Ultra, it's like I want to fill up more complication spots. I will just say quickly on that, like the bigger face in the Apple Watch Ultra, the older Apple Watch faces don't, they just look like they're wasting space, if that makes sense, right? Almost like the first iPads, I remember. It's like, well, that's just, you know, you're not taking advantage of all of that extra space. And of course, there's the Wayfinder watch face that it came brand new with the Apple Watch Ultra and allows you to add more complications. But it's the only face that I can see that really takes full advantage of that extra space on there. So anyway, I'm excited for all of those. Great, that's a great, great, great tip there. I love that. Excellent. Okay, I think we're done. I know we went a little long talking about so many things, but as we are prone to do, which is so much fun. Thanks again, Jeff, for being here as you are every week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Brett. Bye-bye, everybody.